Blog Talk Radio.
Well, Mother is a message, got to get the message to our brothers and sisters.
Mind. Surely we had tried, but we all live right there in happiness.
good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Alafia, you have your Omika 7 in the house, live coming to you straight from my living room. I am the advocate you need and the advisor you want. I am your emperor, here to serve you. Whatever you like, I'm here at your disposal. I'm going to get those drummers in here so they can give me my encore, because I am an emperor, and an emperor deserves the encore. Will you please come in, drummers? The emperor is in the house. Quickly. Thank you so much. You are so sweet sometimes. Hear those drummers come, ladies and gentlemen. I am your emperor, here to serve you at your command. Whatever you like, I am here to serve you. Thank you very much, drummers. Excellent performance. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back in the atmosphere, and I want you to lock that dial in at 646-478-0270. Lock it in, ladies and gentlemen, and keep it right there. If you don't mind, please. This is a segment you certainly want to call in on, ladies and gentlemen. I will be discussing the benefits of us obtaining, or African Americans obtaining, their reparation. What are the benefits? What can we obtain from our 40 acres and a mule? I'm sure it's all good, but we'll be discussing that today. I want all my listening audience who are out there that have something to say, this is the time that you want to call in and give your two cents and talk about how we could benefit as an economy from jump-starting the African Americans' wealth. That's right. How can the country benefit? And will we have to take our filthy lucre somewhere else and circulate it more than one time? What are some of the benefits? Call in. You are welcome here in this classroom to call in so we can discuss that. We're going to talk about how some forms of reparation does not need to be given in the form of monetary gain. It could be given in vouchers, forgiveness of taxes, and what have you. But we're going to get into all of those things, and I'm sure you're going to come up with some clever ideas. Now, Yaomi has been off setting up a web page, and that web page that you see on my page for Blog Talks is a web page to talk a little bit about me, myself, and I, and the tribe, of course. And on that website, you will find information about me, a little bit about the work that I do in the area of poetry, writing poetry. Some of my samples are there. I will be giving those samples away to all of my friends here in the Care to Read room. You have access to download those, go in and listen to them. Now, I'm not so sure how the download works right now because the site has only been up for a short time, but you can go in and listen to those singles that I have from my two-part collection CD. Now, that is from the Journey of the Class Agent. And you'll notice at the bottom of the page there is a sample of the book, the new hardcover book that those poetry rhymes will be bounded in. However, right now it's a wireless book on Lulu.com. But because of the special this month, I am giving away 8 of those singles free of charge. Now, however, you will have to do something. I'm asking you to go to my other site, and my other site has a battery of 10 quiz questions about everything we've been talking about here in this room, and I'm certainly sure everyone's going to pass that test. They're going to get straight A's on it 100%, because most of the information you can refer right back to my prior tapes on demand to answer the question. I definitely would like for you to get involved and go back and answer those questions and then go right on over to my website and listen to as many of those tapes if you want. Now, I will remind you that the actual website is brand new, so some of the areas, like the music, should be workable on every page. There's music. You can tune in and download some of the music there. And also, there's a little story about the center, the Life Center. And we're in the process, ladies and gentlemen, of creating a Life Center that focuses in on family life education. Everything that you've heard in this room will be duplicated in those practices on that website. It'll be a website that people can get all sorts of things from. You know, we've been talking about laws and getting information out about the processing of forms and how to obtain them. Hopefully on that new website, I'm going to try to hook everyone up with information. I didn't say with a lawyer now. Hold your horses. With information about how you can access pro bono information forms so you can start the process of helping yourself in pro se. That's one thing that we project to have finished on that website this year. However, we're going to have a lot of information on information pertaining to family, the economic status of the family. That's what we hope to put on in the future. Right now, what's on that website are mainly DVDs where you can actually go and look at, the YouTube videos. You can go and look at them. They have been handpicked by your OMI. And one I want you to specifically take a close look at, it is dealing with the literacy of selective African-American books. And a gentleman has selected all the books for OMI and this group and recommended them for your reading. And you definitely want to get those books in your library, because if you're going to stay up on things, you've got to build yourself a library. So please look at that collection of YouTube videos and go in and download whichever one you want. These are some valuable ones I found over the years to share with you. I mean, they cover a multitude of all kinds of things. However, that site will be focused in on connecting with you. That is my ING site. And I will be probably posting that website. And right now I'm not going to be able to get into that, so you really don't have to go to that site until Friday to do that work, because I will need to download on my chat room the actual website address. Okay, but in the meantime, I do want you to go to my website and get familiar with it. It's right on my blog talk, right up under website. Just click that on and just play around with it, get familiar, go listen to some music, kick back, enjoy yourself. You're doing a fantastic job in this room. However, I would like to see more of your attendance in here for discussion. But I certainly do like the magnitude that I'm seeing new people come in the room. I want to thank you so much for visiting OMI's Care to Read room, and frequenting our room is very important. I try to get back to you as soon as I can and write you those short notes to let you know I do appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. What I would appreciate even more if you became a permanent friend, a longtime friend. And if OMI has opened up the door to give you an invitation, go on and ask OMI, can you be a friend? I'm sure you will find that I will accept it as soon as I see it. My whole goal is not to try to push for friends in this room, because I have so much to do. But whenever I can, I try to drop you a note to encourage you to become a friend. I would like for everyone to embrace this room and become friends. I am a friendly person, and I do enjoy your company. But I really would love your company if you come in, ring that bell, and call me up. Get on the phone and call me up. We're talking about something so important, you don't want to miss out with a conversation with OMI. Now, you notice that this segment I took on by myself. I felt that this was one that I wanted to personally make sure that we addressed in a certain way. And inviting guests in sometime can really overshadow what you're trying to say. I'm trying to break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down, down to layman's term. And maybe our guest may be up in the atmosphere talking about bougie, maybe talking about whatever, whatever, talking laissez-faire. Laissez-faire talk is not always good for all people. I entertain people from all over the world. I don't want them to be offended. This is a subject that was so delicate that I needed to personally talk to you about. So Omi decided to host every one of these shows, with an exception of those that are calling in, of course. But I wanted to be the featured person on this reparation. So when you got your money and when you got that filthy lucre, then you can say, Omi told me I was going to get this money. Omi said we was going to get over the grain house, and Omi told me we was going overseas to Africa. She said this was going to happen. I wanted you to be able to fulfill a prophecy. So when you came back, you could be smiling from ear to ear saying, Omi, I got over the grain house. Girl, you wouldn't believe it. I am now in charge of the whole entire women's group of Africa. Would you believe it? I'm now over the grain house. I run the oil house. And then brothers walking in, laying their diamonds on the table with smut all over their face saying, I've been underground mining for diamonds, mining my own business. Ain't that something, ladies and gentlemen? These are the things you need to visualize. Remember, we are visualizers. We visualize things and bring things to pass by seeing them in the subconscious. Then we manifest them in the natural. That's the only way you're going to have something, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? I have something very important to tell you about Filthy Lucre and what I found out about it. It's a secret. And I'm going to reveal that secret today so you can see the benefit of us getting our 40 acres and a mule and see the benefit of us staying rooted and concretely, divinely involved in our African heritage. There's something to gain from it. Every country who has given up their African culture and have abandoned it all the way down to the Haitians, everyone who have walked away from their old customs and traditions, have had devastating things fall upon them. Isn't it not a coincidence that every one of those so-called new African Christians that embraced Christianity and that let the missionaries introduce them to Christ had so much mishap come up on them for turning their backs on their ancestors? Do you know right now as we speak, there are Haitians being told, if you don't give up your religion, your African tradition, your customs, we turn our back on you, you won't be able to feed your children. Now, is that legal or what? You've got people having to make a decision to wear the mark of the beast or whether to not be able to buy or trade or eat and feed their children. History is beginning to come around full circle, ladies and gentlemen. There's so much going on in the world, you can hardly keep up with it. But I had to sit down and take a breath to realize that I've been on this air speaking about African consciousness, African religion, African icon, African Ifa and Voodoo and Kemetic. And I've been on here not realizing that the hell that most of the Haitians have been catching. Oh, yes, they're catching hell. I see it all over the Internet. They're catching plenty of hell. A nation that came out with their full rights and to be liberated now is being shamed all over the continent. There is so much going on, ladies and gentlemen, that we take it for granted that we can speak freely about our ancestors and our customs. But yet, they practiced and held true to their customs for so long. And now in a time when they should be embracing their customs, their heritage, their African culture, they're abandoning it. They're abandoning it because someone feels that it's too strong and someone might be afraid that they could use it against them. And yet, we are able to come in this room and to discuss Kemetic traditional African religion, Ifa, and Icon. We haven't discussed too much about Vodun. I'm still learning how Vodun mimics Ifa and how closely related it is. I didn't know how closely it was related until last night when I was able to view for myself from firsthand perspective from a young lady giving a clear rendition of how African Vodun religion is similar to Christianity. Now, as I began to look and listen to what she was saying, she talked about their deities. And you can find it on YouTube. All you have to do is Google Vodun. And that's V-O-O-D-U. And there are several people there, and I'm not quite certain of which sister this was that was speaking, but she clearly broke down information that I had not considered about looking at all of the deities as being angels. However, the Vodun and the Kemetic and Ifa, they just by chance know who their angels are. They know them by name and character, whereas the Christians, she said, do not know their angels. They only know of the 11 angels, Michael, Gabriel, and so on and so on, but they don't know nothing of their nature. However, they are deities just like the Vodun have. And every time the Christians go before these angels, they are petitioning for something, asking and pleading for something, just like in the African faith. She described the thing so well and indicated it is no different. It just so happened that because their group of people were subject to becoming possessed and allowing the spirit to take over them, that Christianity was somehow different. But the young lady begged the difference with the audience and told them that there's no difference, that every Sunday when we go in the church or you go in the church, you are tarrying for the Holy Ghost, and you are trying to let the Spirit take over you, just as the Vodun people are. Now, those people have been crucified, and I think back in the 1970s, they finally legalized African traditional religion in the Vodun, and the government allowed it to be accepted. However, the general population still frowned upon it, and that religion has been held in captivity just like Africans have in slavery. Now, I don't know if it's constitutional or amendment or do we have an amendment written on that would allow us to select our own choice of worshiping. And is there a law that would prohibit anyone from practicing their own traditional denomination? But nevertheless, religion has been held captive to a certain point also. As we talk about the preparation plan for our liberation and for our reparation, we certainly need to include releasing our traditional African heritage, which has also been held hostage. Now, what right does a man have to hold someone else's religion hostage? What right do they have? And is that non-constitutional as well? But there lies a massive group of Haitian people who are now having to make a decision whether to eat or to worship in their traditional heritage. So then again, you see, we still struggle for our freedom. But I say now freedom. Now freedom, because all across the land, there are issues pertaining to refugees. However, they have never treated a group of people worse than they have with the Haitians. I understand in listening to some of the information from the Haitians that the Louisiana Purchase was purchased and given to the United States of America. And it broadened the United States' geographical area. However, that Haitians have never had the support that they really deserve, other than when Clinton and a group of entertainers came over to support the Haitians when they were in their heyday and they were advancing and doing well. But another catastrophe fell upon Haiti, as you know. I don't have to tell you the story. You can go and research it for yourself. It's some devastating things going on with those people right now, really devastating. They're without a country and a man and woman without a custom or tradition and religion. It is our inalienable rights to have our customs and traditions. It really is, ladies and gentlemen. And I do believe that there's nothing to fear but fear itself when a man practices his religion. In all religion, you find a balance of good and evil, even in Christianity, if you would check it. Who gives Christianity the right to demonize other people's religion? Who? And what makes Christianity the authority on religion when they are the baby of the group? Do you not realize that African religion is the oldest traditional religion in the books? The oldest. It just so happened that Christianity is a Johnny come lately. It is the newest infantry religion on the scene. There's a lot to be talked about, ladies and gentlemen, and I certainly can't talk about it all in one night, and I don't care to. However, I do want to get on that topic of reparation. And right after station identification, we are going to be on that track, taking your mind down the track, and we'll be right back at you in 60 seconds. We will give you your world back in approximately 1.5 hours, to be exact. So get ready and get geared up to call in to talk about how can you benefit from receiving your reparation and what benefit would you have in getting a mule, and is that basically the concept, and how would you like your reparation paid back to you, ladies and gentlemen? Please call in and talk about it. We definitely are going to get those advertisers out here because they're still waiting for you to come in and get your products, and Kwanzaa stuff is still on the shelf, and they can't wait any longer. They've discounted that down as far as they're going to discount it. It is time to go in and support your community access people who have stores and products. Let them tell you. Yes, yes. That's what we need, ladies and gentlemen, the ability to name for ourselves and decide for ourselves and to buy from our own merchant in our own communities. And I hope you are doing your shopping right in your very own community, keeping that dollar economically circulating more than one time in your community. But remember, we're getting ready for a transition, ladies and gentlemen. We want to go to the market and do it like the Africans do. We want to be able to go and buy fresh fruit and buy good products. So tell your merchant what you're looking for. If he's not producing good products and they're inferior and you think that the neighbor next to him is doing a better job, then tell him that you are in competition with your other merchants. You got to do a better job. We're looking for natural things and wholesome things. And ladies and gentlemen, they'll be able to support you because they want your dollar, ladies and gentlemen, and they want to keep the dollar circulating in the community. So why not go out and challenge them? We're challenging everything that can be challenged these days. We're even challenging our ministers, our evangelists, our deacons, our apostles about the way they carry on with church and about the way the fivefold ministry functions. We're challenging them about our tithes and offerings and how they're being distributed. Everything that can be shaken these days is being shaken up, and all that is not built on solid ground will come down. So if you cannot be shaken and you are part of an establishment that gives service, you ought to have your thing so uptight, all right, out of sight, that it won't fall down. So fear not, churches, fear not, that people are going to challenge you about their filthy lucre because they don't have a lot of it these days. So they got to be a good steward over the little that they do have to make sure that it's properly distributed. And they want to put their money where they can see it circulating in their own community so it can come back to them more than one time. Now, economic is the key, ladies and gentlemen. We have to get some wealth. I didn't say go out and get another job. I said we have to get some wealth. Now, we want to have a little excess so we can go to the movie sometime and we can be seen out in community with our family, being able to eat out once a week somewhere in the community, being able to fellowship with elders and brothers and sisters. We're not going to be some cheap wire where every time we get paid, we can only pay bills and we have no excess left over to go out and enjoy ourselves. You pay yourself first, ladies and gentlemen. Always pay yourself first. And if it's a trip you want to go on or something you want to do, treat yourself kindly and pay yourself, because you will be able to hold up in these jobs. Because if you're constantly just paying bills and have no excess to do nothing special with, you'll soon become very gloom in your thinking and hopeless. And we're trying to build positive individuals. And if you have a job, do it to the best of your ability unto God, because it will go well with you. Now, remember I told you we're building institutions. We're not just looking for a job anymore, because they told me most of those went overseas. And what happens when your job travels and goes somewhere? You get up and go with it. Now, most of the immigrants that came here, when they found out jobs were coming here, they packed up and came here. And we've got to get it together. We can't be afraid to go around the corner and back. We got to understand the benefits of having a passport, being international, traveling abroad. We got to understand the benefits and how small this world is. When you get on the internet, you're talking to people over in Guam, and then you talk to some people over in the United Kingdom, and then you go over and talk to someone in Spain and Russia and Germany. Do you see how small our Earth is? Do you see the diaspora is at your disposal? That is the same way that you can travel, ladies and gentlemen. It is no different. Don't get it in your head that you were meant to stay here and stay put, Kizzy. Kizzy, I said don't move now. Stay put, Kizzy. Your name means Kizzy. It means stay put. Don't go tell me that Chicken George stuff, because I know that's not true. That's an African talking, a slave at that. We're no more slaves than we used to be. We've got to understand that our freedom was bought for a price of losing our reparation. which we should have gotten. Not just our 40 acres and a mule, but our $100 at that time would have given us extra wealth. And an extra dollar would have put us in another category, I'm sure. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take this time to invite you to be a part of our talking cure. I am going to get permission from my elder to speak, and then I'm going to go right into the purification. I'm going to see if my elder will give me permission to speak. Elder, do I have permission to speak?
Yes, you do have permission to speak.
Thank you so very much, Elder. And I think Baba is with us today. I'm going to get Baba in here to do our libation and to do our purification. Baba, is the purifications ready?
Purifications are ready.
All right. Thank you, Baba. Pour libation.
Libations to the north.
Pour libations to the north.
Libations to the south.
Libations to the south.
Libations to the west.
Libations to the west.
Libations to the east.
Libations to the east. We pour libations.
To the ground.
We pour libations to the ground.
Wash our face.
And I wash my face and hands so that I am purified and that I do not greet our ancestors with a stale face. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have not taken out your list, please take out your list so that you can begin to assist me in the libation and in calling on our ancestors. Right now, we like to call on our ancestors. I am going to acknowledge this listener on the audience, if you'll bear with me. Hello, listener. You are in the Curator Read Room. Who am I speaking to?
Daniel.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, listener. You're in the Curator Read Room. Who am I speaking to?
This is Daniel. I'm trying to figure out, are you guys serious about this whole 40 acres and a mule thing?
Is this Daniel? Daniel, we definitely...
Are you serious about 40 acres and a mule?
Daniel, we definitely would like to include you in the conversation. If you would give us 5 minutes here, we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Thanks so much for calling, Daniel. Hold on for 1 second here. We'll clue you in. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now in the process of calling on our ancestors and acknowledging them and allowing them to be a part of this session. I light a candle to my mother's side of the family, and I say Ashe. I light a candle to my father's side of the family, and I say Ashe. I pour a glass of water towards my mother's side of the family and giving them water to quench their thirst. I also put a glass of water to my father's side of the spirit and helping him quench the thirst. And I say Ashe. I call on all my ancestors that they may be present today and that they may guide us and protect us. And we say, Ashe, Ashe. I call on Clara Jenkins, Robert Jenkins, Tommy P. Harvey, Ashe. I call on Louise Lord, Ashe. I call on Isa Lily, Ashe. Tommy Harvey, Ashe. Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe. And we say, Ashe. Ladies and gentlemen, join me as we go into the libation, as we go into the sanctuary. Please be patient. We are about to enter the room for our discussion, and we thank you so very much for being patient with us. Thank you so very much, ladies and gentlemen. We're about to get into our topic for this evening. We are discussing the benefits of reparation. What are they? And can we benefit from having our 40 acres and a mule currently now? And what does 40 acres and a mule mean now? And what are the things that we can use to obtain the monetary gain? Now, we have a listener in the audience, and we're going to appeal to his best interest and get input from him. However, I would like to say that it's already been determined that reparation is at hand, And it has already been offered to us from some of our elders and chiefs over in Africa. And if they start to process, then maybe some other people will take lead and follow and do the same thing. They've already given out land in Africa, and land is currently available, and we've talked about that. So the reparation is inevitable, ladies and gentlemen. The question is, will it be offered here on this land, or will it be offered abroad in Africa? And that is the question. So let me get this listener involved here today. He has something to say. Listener, you're in the air.
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to say that, you know, I think there's a misconception here about what the 40 acres and a mule is really about.
Well, I
think there certainly is, because it was actually only a limited amount of space that was partitioned, and it was promised to a specific 18,000 slaves, which was 40 acres basically equates to a 16th of a mile, and they were going to get a mule, and they were going to get the land enough to start a family, you know, and a farm, you know, and to have their own space. There was nothing in that order. In fact, it was never even a law. It was a field order that was given by a general during the Civil War.
Absolutely.
And so there. There was nothing to state that that was a law, and then Andrew Jackson, you know, who had the sense to know that you don't right one wrong by doing another wrong, had the common sense to put it into that practice. And personally, I just think that anyone that feels entitled to something doesn't understand the world in which we live in. There's been a lot of mistakes that have been made.
Well, let me say something. Let me kind of insert something here. I do beg the difference with you on some things. However, you're correct about Andrew Jackson was definitely – he was doing a ploy. It was a ploy to make the Northerners think – the Southerners think that, you know, if they pull their slaves, that they would not be able to continue and fight and win the war. So it was a ploy. It was never meant to be put in the records. It was only something discussed, which, you know, you could say that it was hearsay and discussion, but there was never anything put in the book. And that's where they knew they would be protected, because they never wrote anything down. And when they decided to give that extra land, it went out as a decree. And some of the Africans on the islands did have access to the land, which they quickly apprehended. And the first reparation was given to the slave owners who had slaves who were affected by the economy. They were actually inadvertently, because some of the slaves, they thought they were going to lose money with those slaves. So they were told by Andrew Jackson that they would be given a reparation to compensate for the lossage of their slaves. So it is on record that the first reparation that was given was in Washington, D.C., and those slave owners did get $300 per head. And that was known as the biggest slave ownership place in the world, Washington, D.C. at that time. So they did receive reparation in place of giving up slaves, or slaves who were actually taken away from them, because it really affected them economically. So reparation did take place, and that Emancipation Proclamation, first of all, those amendments, they had a difficult time approving those amendments, and those congressmen could not get them to approve them. And eventually they pushed that amendment through. So the amendments were written to ratify that Emancipation Proclamation, which it was written on the books that if the slave owners literally signed up with the Confederates and joined the Confederates again, that they would, in fact, allow them to keep their slaves. So in essence, even while the Emancipation Proclamation was on the book, it was being undermined, because they were told that they could still keep their slaves, when in fact that Emancipation Proclamation indicated that no person could be held to indentured servitude unless indubitably convicted of a crime. So therein lies how because they came up with a way that they could induce these laws, which were very, very cumbersome on the blacks at that time, because they had a number of laws that went forth that they could be picked up on any number of fines, and at that point put back into slavery. So it was all a ploy. And they
Let me interrupt for a second. Are you suggesting that somehow now that people that weren't alive at the time should somehow be compensated for the sins of the past?
You mean the people that are not alive?
Because certainly there's no slave owner alive today, and there's no slave that's alive today.
Okay, wait. Let me ask you one question at a time. Am I suggesting that those people that are not alive be compensated?
Are you suggesting that the people that are alive today somehow get compensated?
Let me put it quite clear. Certainly I am, because the people that are alive today, they are descendants of a DNA which can be traced and tracked. They're descendants of slaves. Inevitable that can be tracked. And those people are still here. And literally, there are some scars and post-traumatic stress that are still.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
And I'm saying that. No, let me finish now. I'm saying that if you trace the history of slavery and what really happened to us, you probably don't know. You need to go do your history, really, because there are some terrible things that happened that post-traumatic stress could definitely be, that could be a damage, and it could be easily proved that there is a damage of post-traumatic stress from a lineage of people who've gone through traumatic turmoil. I mean, I'm sure that any doctor would concur on that, and I am suggesting that we're not three-fifths of a person. We are human beings. We are equal to you, if not better. And therefore, what you would want for your family, you should want for our family.
Okay, and first of all, let me correct you. You might not know the history on how the three-fifths doctrine came to be.
I'm a history teacher. I know exactly how it came to be. But tell the audience.
Then let me tell the audience. So a lot of people, you know, will cite, you know, the three-fifths doctrine as if it's an insult, to people of African ancestry. But the fact remains that the folks it was all about voter representation, and the South, who wanted to keep the slaves, wanted to count their slaves so they can have more representation. So they wanted to count the head count, but not give them the legal right to vote. Okay, and then
taxation without representation is wrong.
Wait,
the law, right?
Sure. But hold on. Let me explain this. So let me explain this because you might be a little confused on this. So the folks in the North said, no, we want them to be counted as not counted at all because the folks in the North wanted to end the slavery. Okay. So here's what happened. So the compromise was three-fifths. Now see, if you would have had the North, who was on the side of freeing the slaves, if you would have had them get their way, then you would have been considered not a person at all. And if you wanted the people that wanted to keep slavery legal, you would have been counted as a full person. So this idea that it's an insult to be called three-fifths is disingenuous to the argument of what was really going on at the time.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I understand what you're saying there, but who gives any man the right to determine the value of any human being when we were here first? How do you determine our quality of person when we were here first? We civilized you. So who in the right gave them the right to have a constitution that didn't include us? First, there lies the problem. You can't write a constitution that don't include the Asiatic people who were first here. How do you write a document was bogus?
There's a whole lot of mistakes that go on through history. You know, American
not
history.
Not mistakes. I wouldn't call them mistakes. I really wouldn't call them mistakes.
Well, we should call them.
Why are you calling them mistakes, though?
Well, we can call them mistakes.
It was intentionally done. That was not a mistake. That was intentionally done.
But here's the point. In this generation, you have to drop the race card. And here's why you have to drop it.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
You have to drop it.
No.
Young man, let me say something to you.
We do not have to drop the race car. You're the one to pull the race car.
I am telling you that
if you got people who have been punitively damaged by taxes, we are still paying taxes on that reparation for people who got reparations, and we didn't even get reparations, and we're paying the taxes so they can get them.
You made the Indians
a Soviet nation when they are no more Asiatic than we are.
Listen, here's what you're trying to promote to your listeners. You're trying to promote that they're a victim, and they're not victims.
Oh, you're trying to promote that we're not. Prove that we're not. Any psychiatrist would say, listen to me. Any psychiatrist would say that there is some post-traumatic stress damage, okay? And any psychologist would say that you got wealth off of us because you sent us out as slaves. We were like a walking, talking ATM machine. We made a profit for you, and you benefited from it. Your children now have stocks that our children don't have, and you benefited from it.
No, but here's the reality. Listen, if Barack Obama would have listened to the horse shit that you're selling right now, he couldn't be president now. He couldn't be president if he didn't shun the idea that he's a victim. He's not a victim. He's a grown man.
Barack Obama doesn't even acknowledge the fact that he's black. He doesn't even acknowledge the fact that he went to Muslim school. My question is, he's biracial. And usually the matriotic from the mother's side determines who the person is anyway. He might think he's white. Have you thought of that? Come on, let's be real here.
I think you're a bigot is what I think.
No, I'm not a bigot. And people in this room know, see, whenever I ask for what's mine, I have a white sister-in-law. I got white people in my family. And I love them just the same. And people come in this room, I invite
them
in.
But you think they owe you something.
You ought to acknowledge it and say, give it to them. They earned it.
Why would you not want us to have it?
What do you know our history of what we went through in Glory Island? Do you know that they threw babies off the ship? They raped women right in front of their husbands? That's a disgrace. Those things can't really be compensated for. But the Africans who participated in the slave trade did come out, and the chiefs announced that they were wrong, that they had done a disservice to the African Americans, and they offered land and an apology. What has American offered to us?
Well, you realize we have entertained you.
We have taken care of your babies. We have cooked for you. We've done everything. We've been the best of friends to you.
Wait, do you realize though that the original settlers of the United States were descendants of Mongolia that are from Asia, baby.
You got it wrong. The first people on all of the earth. If you trace it back to Lucy,
we were the oldest people on the earth.
I'm speaking U.S. history. Okay, but that's a lie. That's your history. Some of that history is not true, like you said.
No, listen.
Now, you know that's not true. Now, why are they finding Dignish? Let me ask you a question. If you tell me Angola was the first one, why are they finding Dignish, Lucy's bones, for the gender of a female, the oldest bones in this earth? I don't care what abolitioner you're talking about. We were here first.
No, but I'm not talking about the first person. I'm talking about the first people in the U.S. We know that when Columbus got here, there was quote-unquote Indians here, right, the natives. Well, the natives came.
You finally admitted that, right? Because first they said that they discovered the earth and there was nobody here.
Agreed. But hold on. But here's the thing you got to understand is where did those people come from? Those people came from the Bering Strait.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. If those people came here, you better believe we made them. We're the fathers and mothers. We are your mother and father. We produced you.
So, wait a minute. Now, seriously,
you ask where did they come from? We produced them.
Okay.
So how are you going to make the child before the mother?
Let me explain something to you.
Okay, go ahead. Here's the thing.
The Mongolians were the first people that settled the U.S.
No, the Mongolians were not the first people to settle here. They got that wrong. Now, tell me where you got that information. Where'd you get that information?
It's called world history. I majored in it. Hold up.
Now, we're not going to pull a fast one because you majored in world history. You know so many lies in that history is not funny. And you know it, too. You found them. You found it even about Christopher Columbus. They've told you lies. They got real truth in other books that you don't even have in your history books. Now, come on now.
I'm going to get to my point. The point is, and you can let your listeners do the fact-checking that they need to, and you can do it as well. Here's the bottom line. Mongolians settled the U.S. And
I'm not buying that.
Okay,
I'm correct.
Okay, that's fine. There's no way
Mongolian people could be here before the oldest Africans in the world. There's nothing
in documentation. When did you get here?
No, wait a minute. Can you tell me when they first discovered black people? You can't. Because they don't even know when we first came on the scene, we was here before everyone.
Oh, my God.
So how are you going to tell me Mongolian people came here before us?
They
we
were the
produced
first
the Mongolian
the
people.
Are you not listening?
What is
their
language?
The U.S.
What is the Mongolian's language?
I can't tell you, but I can tell you that history shows that the first people that came to the U.S. came through the Bering Strait, and they were descendants of the Mongolian Empire.
A lot of stuff. Remember, we said a lot of stuff was wrong. We discovered that Christopher Columbus was lying. There's a lot of lies in history. I teach history. I know there's a lot of lies in it. I couldn't even teach some of that stuff that I read in the book. I was like, this is a lie. See, Mongolian people couldn't have been here before us. We're the oldest doctrinated bones in the world. Do you know that the archives already show that Lucy's bones are the oldest matriarchic bones here? So how will Mongolia precede us? When we produce most of the other, we can produce albino, we can produce Mongolian, we can produce you, and we're black. See, you got to know something about genetics. Mongolian people can't produce us. We produce them. You got to know your DNA and genetic. Do you understand that? Sir? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I guess he didn't read all of his history, and he tried to make me think the Mongolian people were here before everyone. Now, if that was the case, ladies and gentlemen, we should have a language. And if he could not produce a language for the Mongolian people, and you've got Lucy's and Dignish's bones that were here, of a female gender that was here before anybody on this earth, it is quite natural that a Mongolian wouldn't be producing Lucy. Lucy produced them, being an African. And if Lucy produced them, we preceded all forms of civilization on earth. Now, how can you write a constitution and tell me that good, fine men can make a decision on their mothers and father if they're legitimately human or not? I say that the document was bogus, and because the document was bogus, I say that it's nowhere in the world that they can write a document and tell us that there was ambiguous language in there, and that language literally said that we were three-fifths of a human being when we helped to civilize those people. We cannot very well be civilizing people and at the same time being inferior. Now, which one is it? Either we was inferior, we was crawling around on all fours, and we were living like no men, but yet they say we were sedentary people, and we were not no men. So we got a lot of problems on history books and people repeating information that needs to be clarified. I welcome more conversation, and I thank you, young man, for your comments. I thank you for your input, and I did ask for you to come in. You just need some clarification over understanding genetics, and genetics will prove me right. A black can produce all forms of races of people. We can even produce a gender of albinos, which is also can be classified as Caucasian. We can also produce all forms of other people, but our DNA is the prominent, so we are able to take the DNA and reproduce it. But I don't think Mongolian could ever produce us. Now, if you had told us a different person, maybe I could have went with you on that. But Mongolian, no, I'm not a bigot. I am open to talk to anyone. I am for what is right. And for what is right is that you do right by people and it will go well for you. And you don't do anything to inferior people that you think are inferior because they're darker than you, and you don't go about the business of trying to say that those people have no value. I will determine their value. God created us in his own image, and it is out the hat now Black women know that they are God. And when God said, let us make man in our own image, we were there at the inception of the development of the stages of the man. We are no more inferior to you than you are to us. At this very moment, you must know that we are the mothers and fathers of this world. And the Bible does tell you that, to honor your mothers and fathers. And I don't think you're honoring us very well by insulting us with stupidity, telling us about people that came on the scene as Johnny Come Lately, and you're making them out to be the oldest people in the civilization. We've got to be a lot smarter than that if we are going by what Christopher Columbus found and discovered that he had lied and it was perpetuated to the point where even Caucasian had to stop the lie. And now you're telling me to look at the history books. There's a lot that the history books need to be challenged on and changed. And if we're ever going to do something right in this world, we have got to right a wrong. Yes, I think we deserve reparation. Now, is the President of the United States going to reach in his pocket and pull out a bunch of cash and give it to us? No, that's not how things work. But come on, let's reason together now. We're sensible people. Just like Obama got his master's degree, I got mine. I went to school like he did. I was promised a piece of the apple pie just like him. And don't tell me because Obama got to be the president, he's more better than I am. He's not. And what we're looking at is Obama is a multiracial person. He could be raised in the atmosphere of being a Caucasian. Maybe he thought he was supposed to be president. And at the same time, he may not even acknowledge being black. My point is, if you put him up before us and say, here's your black president, but if he does not stand for things that will assist and aid the black people, then I don't care what color he is, then he is not accentuating looking at the poverty of all people and oppressed people that is down. I don't care what color they are. He's got to be able to see that and lift up a standard so that it'll never happen again in history. Now, if he could turn his other cheek and say, well, it doesn't matter because my mother was white and I wasn't one of them, I didn't have to go through it, then he is definitely not for all the people. Being for all the people means an injustice done to one is an injustice done to all. And just because I want what's right for my people, you should not ever make the mistake of calling me a bigot. I have white sisters-in-law. I have white nephews, and they are in my home, and they come to my home, and I've talked to them on several occasions. I don't care what they are. As long as they come correct and they have the right concept of being fair, then they're welcome. And I tell everyone that in this room, but I don't think it's right for one race of people to dominate and take over. Let every man be equal. And I say that all the time in this room, in all fairness. And at that point, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to end our session with the fact that we've got to get our history clear. We've got to stop preaching about false histories and lies. We've got to dig deeper and get truths. And that's what we're all about in this room. Like to join me tomorrow, bring some more truth. We can discuss this further. I thank my listener and my caller. Thank you very much. Please call in tomorrow, same time, same place. We look forward to hearing from you. You're in the Care to Read room, and we thank you so much for being a part of this session. And we'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place, tomorrow. And on that note, we say baba booey to you, y'all. Oh, double.